Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
President Biden issues a big executive order on promoting competition in the economy while empowering his antitrust enforcers. Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We're joined today by my colleagues, WSJ columnists Kim Strassel and Bill McGurn. On Friday, the president released a long executive order that, among other things, creates a White House Competition Council and includes some specific directives for executive agencies. To give a sense of the tone of this, I'll read just part of the preamble. It says, robust competition is critical to preserving America's role in as the world's leading economy. Yet over the last several decades, as industries have consolidated, competition has weakened in too many markets, denying Americans the benefits of an open economy. It goes on to say that federal government inaction has contributed to these problems, unquote. So, Bill, Joe Biden says that there's too much concentration in the economy and the federal government can fix it. What do you make of that diagnosis and prescription?
Yeah, well, for one thing, if you actually look at the order, it's incredibly large and filled with a lot of bureaucratic language, mostly having to do with proposals to change rulemaking opportunities. But I think you've nailed the premise. The premise is that our economy now is not competitive, or different markets within the economy are not competitive, and we need the government to fix that. And it's kind of an interesting challenge, because what they're really saying is we need a bigger and more powerful government with more interventions to have a more competitive economy. And I think that's certainly not the way that I see it. And I think it's going to open the door. I mean, it doesn't get that specific apart from changing rules and so forth, but I think it's a signal to his regulators, his agency chiefs, even Congress. He wants more intervention in the economy on behalf of consumers. And as we know, one of the big flaws in that is that government is often not a disinterested player in these markets, and often they make it worse rather than better.
Well, I agree with you, Bill, that the executive order looks to me like kind of a wild grab bag of stuff. And one question I have is, even if you agree with some of the premises, does the federal government really have the tools to address the problem? And I'll pick a specific example. So there's a section of the order that says the chair of the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, in the chair's discretion, is encouraged to consider working with the rest of the commission to exercise the FTC's statutory authority as appropriate and consistent, and on and on and on and on, in areas such as unfair occupational licensing restrictions. So there's a place where I think occupational licensing is a real problem. According to some tallies of this, nearly a quarter of workers have to have some kind of license for the job that they're doing. If you dig into the state local regulations, a lot of these licenses look protectionist. So Kim, I don't know if you remember this, there was a bill in Florida some years ago to deregulate a whole bunch of occupations, including interior designers. And the interior designers were arguing that it's a safety issue. You have to know which curtains are flammable and so on. And so I agree that that's a problem. It just is not clear to me, Kim, that the FTC really is the body that is able to unwind all of these state laws and rules.
Right. I mean, and look, the occupational licensing part of this executive order was one of the few bright spots. I'd love to see something happen on that, because as you note, this is a terrible protectionist racket. You have, you know, it's not just interior designers, but, you know, chimney sweeps or hair braiders. They basically, the people who are in, want to make sure that there's no more competition. So they make it harder for anyone else to get in the business by lobbying their state legislatures or government to come up with all of these very tough rules for admission. So yeah, I mean, that would be awesome to get rid of it. I agree with you that the FTC is not necessarily the body that can take down these state laws. That being said, it's sort of ironic that the one good part of this executive order is something the FTC can't do. I nonetheless think that this is a very scary executive order because it comes on the back of a number of moves in a number of agencies like the Federal Trade Commission, designed to give Democrats vast new powers. And then to unleash them, the executive order is essentially now saying, use those powers and go and really hamstring business. You know, and the FTC is a very good example of that. It has a new chair, Lina Khan. And one of the first things that happened is the Democratic commissioners, once she was confirmed, took a number of votes to essentially give them total control. They got rid of the role of the chief administrative law judge, who usually presides over fact-finding and rulemaking. And now Democrats will do that. They also killed the longstanding requirement that you needed a majority vote of the commission to start an investigation. Now any one single commissioner can do that. And it goes on. And so I think that when you look at this executive order, you have to put it in tandem, look at it together with some of the other actions that are going on in some of these agencies. And what you see is a Biden administration readying to launch a big new assault on business, on everything from issues of competition to pricing down to sort of daily work practices.
Well, I don't dispute that at all, though. Before we get there, let me pick on a couple other specific things in the order that just show the difficulty of working through the administrative state. And also, again, to me, a lot of this stuff looks like small potatoes and trying to get nice headlines. So there's a piece of the order that says the Secretary of Transportation shall publish for notice and comment a proposed rule requiring airlines to refund baggage fees when a passenger's luggage is substantially delayed. I mean, there's another good example of something that sounds great getting headlines, but is this really a competition issue? Everybody's annoyed if you have to pay the bag fee and then your bag doesn't get to your destination in order and on time with you. But again, it's hard to see to my eye that that's a real competition problem in the airline business. There's another one asking the FCC to consider prohibiting unjust or unreasonable early termination fees for end user communications contracts. So there again, Bill, so the Biden administration is saying if you have a cell phone contract or something like that and there's a termination fee, we would like the FCC to look into maybe perhaps deciding that unjust examples of that are a problem. But other than getting great headlines, it's hard for me to see that that is really going to make a difference in the economy.
Well, that's what the whole exercise is about. If you read the executive order and the fact sheet with it, it's basically promising generalities like we're going to save money on the internet or we're going to lower prescription drug prices. These are generalities. But then you see the way they're going to do this is to expand some administrative agencies' say in these markets. I mean, you just mentioned the baggage fees. It seems to me if this is really a big thing for customers, some airlines is going to do that on their own. Do we really need to feed the beast here, the administrative state, by adding people and adding powers to some body and adding what they're going to regulate? You know, that's why the real question is, what is the price of these things? When they say they're going to lower prescription drug prices, what is the price we're going to pay for that? It's certainly going to be a bigger government and so forth. And what are perhaps the unintended consequences? And I think this stems from the other thing that's flowing from the Biden administration, which is a resumption of the assumption that big is inherently bad. And that was the dominant antitrust assumption for decades until Robert Bork came around. And I think he changed, you know, successfully argued, you know, a better measure is this harmful to consumers? And to put that in context, I mean, some of it is why are they big? Are these companies big because they've had unfair advantages from the government or some other unfair advantage? Or are they big simply because consumers like them? and they have a lot of that they're pleasing customers, and so the customers sign up for it. I think that's all going out the window now.
Hang tight, we'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
Rapid expansion?
We're ready.
Worker shortage?
We're good.
Anything can change the world of work.
A celebrity buys the company.
Depends on who it is, but relax, we've got ADP.
From HR to payroll, ADP designs forward-thinking solutions to take on the next anything.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. On the antitrust side, I mean, I agree, Kim, that this is a signal from the president to executive agencies to go hard on the antitrust stuff. And the most alarming is maybe the word I would use. The most alarming line I found in this White House fact sheet on the executive order. It says it calls on federal agencies to vigorously enforce the antitrust laws. And then it says, and recognizes that the law allows them to challenge prior bad mergers that past administrations did not previously challenge, unquote. And that looked like quite a statement to me, Kim. I mean, Biden essentially saying here that the government might go back in time and say, I know we approved your merger back in 2014 or 2012, but now the new administration would like to undo it or at least put some conditions on your business.
Yeah, that's really scary. And I agree, that was probably the line that jumped out at me too. And to be clear, this is obviously most directly aimed at big tech. This is the Biden administration channeling some of the rage that you have seen on both sides of the aisle over the actions of Google or Twitter or Facebook. And both sides have different motivations, but they are united in that fury. So if I were the CEO of a big tech company, I'd be most worried. But this is also something that could be aimed at any industry, at telcos, at media companies, at railroads. And the notion that you would be able to look back and go and take a merger that was perhaps completed 10 years ago with a functioning business and now decide that that company has to be broken up or pieces have to be sold off or that they have to submit to entirely new rules of businesses just because this administration says so. That's going to introduce a level of uncertainty into markets and business that could be very unhealthy. But look, I think the bigger overall point here, and Bill touched on it, is this entire executive order is sort of broadcasting an early 20th century view of monopolies and how you deal with antitrust. And that's what also makes that line dangerous, is because it isn't that they're looking back, but that the measure that they're going to use. And it sounds as though they have this almost fundamentalist, outdated view that they are returning to of big is bad. And that they're not necessarily going to be looking at some of the benefits that come with bigger companies that Bill mentioned that are good for consumer welfare. Sometimes big companies can reduce prices. They can be more efficient. Sometimes it gives being bigger gives you more leverage to negotiate lower prices. And so that's why scholars over the years have taken to looking at these metrics of how consumers fare rather than size. If we're going to go back to the big old days of just broad trust busting for the sake of trust busting, the economy is going to be in for a lot of upheaval.
And Bill, I mean, it's not clear to me this consumer welfare standard, the reigning strategy for analyzing these sort of things is trying to figure out what's good for the public, what's good for consumers. And it's not clear to me what is supposed to replace that. I mean, I understand the argument that if you measure consumer welfare generally in terms of prices, and on the internet, there are all sorts of things that are free, like Facebook. It's a challenge to apply that standard, perhaps. But if you're trying to use other metrics, it seems to me, at least, that you're getting into much more subjective territory, where it's basically up to the whims of the people running the agencies or who's in the White House whether these mergers are approved or go through or not.
Yeah, I think price, it's not perfect, but it is a good measure. And in so many of these areas, you know, if the claims about these companies were true, that because of reduced competition, they're hurting the consumers, you would expect that to mean prices are rising. And you see that that isn't what happened. And I'd add one other unintended consequence in this. You know, we mentioned companies sometimes are bigger because they're more efficient and they can actually give lower prices to consumers because of their efficiency and so forth. But also big companies, the irony is this is directed against big companies and against basically the concept of bigness. But the irony is the more regulations you have, the more you're favoring big business. Because if I run a mom and pop shop or some small thing, I can't afford all the lawyers to fill out all the forms and so forth. You know, that's why they always talk about regulatory capture. In a way, a highly regulated state means that only the really big are going to survive. And it's a way for them to get rid of competition, right? Smaller competitors who are really interested in an open market. And I think we don't pay enough attention to that when we're considering the price of what what's being proposed.
Maybe it would help to talk about a specific case, and one that's going on right now is Amazon's proposal to buy MGM Studios, the movie studio shop. And the FTC apparently is doing some sort of extended review of that, has asked for more information. And it's an $8.5 billion purchase. That's a big purchase. And you can understand how at first blush people think, well, Amazon is a huge company. It's very successful. It's doing very well in all sorts of businesses, not only online retail, but internet technology, server, you know, selling server space. Does it really need to buy MGM? On the other hand, Kim, it seems like every 2 weeks there's a new online streaming service launched. And according to some reports, the average American household subscribes to four of these streaming services. Netflix makes a lot of its own content and has done very well there. Disney is a powerhouse. So is there any lack of competition here?
Right. And not even just traditional movie studios either. I mean, I remember watching a couple of years ago, Ricky Gervais hosting one of the, I think it was the Golden Globes, just laughing that nobody paid any attention to studios anyway, because everything is being produced by Netflix and companies that have broken into this market. And so, I mean, I don't know about you guys. I'm terrified when I turn on the TV. I don't even know where to begin, which app to pull up and because I'm so far behind. Do I go to Amazon Prime? Do I go to Netflix? Do I pull up Stars or HBO or Disney Plus? And forget using the technology. It's just more a question of keeping track of all the series and shows out there. So on its face, to your point, Kyle, this sort of looks ridiculous. And it's very much driven by the fact, one fact, that Amazon is big. And therefore, if Amazon buys something else, it will get bigger. And we shouldn't want that. But that really can't be the metric, again, for these kind of decisions. And so we'll see how it goes. But this is the concerning part about the Biden administration. I think we're going to see a lot more actions like this that don't necessarily have a grounding in rational thought, but just on the big is bad mentality.
Yeah, and skepticism of this also seems to be sort of a prediction, a forecast about the future, that if MGM tied up with Amazon, that it would be this unstoppable force. And it seems far from obvious that that's the case. I mean, MGM, for all we know, without having a tie-up with some kind of big streaming service, might fall behind in this new streaming age. And on the vice versa, Amazon has tried making some of its own content, but as far as I can tell, has been less critically successful at that than Netflix and Disney and some of these other players that have a longer history in the, you know, movie production business. And so for all we know, if Amazon doesn't get a broader streaming library, then its streaming business will fall behind these other players, particularly Disney, which is kind of a juggernaut. So, I mean, Bill, how are regulators supposed to evaluate this and be able to figure out the business of this movie streaming age better than the people who are in the business.
Yeah, I think they shouldn't. And this is one of the reasons why, you know, as Kim points out on my TV, you know, we have all sorts of different streaming services to find different things because none of them has everything that we want. It seems to me that what Amazon's trying to do is make up, as you kind of imply, for a shortcoming, you know, and to make its products more attractive to its consumers. Isn't that what we want companies to do? Isn't that what the competition is now leading Amazon to do? Again, it's just this obsession with business, bigness, and the idea that once you're big, you can do anything and it's just smooth sailing. I just don't think that's true. And I think we have enough examples of mergers and big places that lost their competitive edge to smaller rivals over time. So, you know, I think the market is doing what the president ostensibly wants it to do without its help, without the government's push.
Well, that's where I was going next. Kim, I mean, it seems to me that especially in the tech business, it seems like recent decades are littered with examples of companies that were huge and were unstoppable. I mean, Nokia in cell phones or MySpace in sort of social networking. And maybe a great example of this is the AOL America Online Time Warner merger, which was a huge deal. And people were talking about it in transformational terms. And within 10 years, Verizon had bought AOL and then AT&T bought Time Warner and the whole thing was carved up for scraps, essentially. So, I mean, it seems like it's inherently difficult to make predictions about how these mergers will go.
No, absolutely. I mean, I'm actually old enough to remember America Online and having my little tiny first Macintosh computer and listening to that modem boot up to get your mail. But, you know, and the fretting and the worrying and the hand wringing over that merger. And as you said, it was a complete disaster. And, you know, I think one more thing to point out here, too, is that the other risk of this is that you end up making competition worse. We have found when Justice Department intercedes in this, that sometimes it has the opposite effect of strengthening the competitors of some of these targets. So, you know, I'm thinking, for instance, the Justice Department for years waged a war against Apple and its deals with book publishers. And guess what that did? It helped make Amazon the most dominant player in ebooks. You know, this company that we're now wringing our hands over in terms of their own proposed buy of MGM. So we can have unintended consequences here. And I would argue that if you look at the long history of some of these antitrust campaigns by the government, that is more often the outcome than any better competition that they originally aimed for.
Thank you, Kim and Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back later this week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.